Hi, this is Lexi
and Sid
of Hess Van Schlemmer Metalworks and Art, home of the Schlemmer Metal Wolves. We are a small but furious family-run welding, fabrication, and metalworks shop with CNC capabilities and now full-scale powder coating operation. We bring unique, affordable quality art to life within the realm of practicality. Whether it's signs, sculptures, railings, shelves, furniture, or even just powder coat for your rims or your patio set, give us a look, check us out on Facebook or Instagram, or call 618-670-5724. We are Hess Van Schlemmer Metalworks. That was terrible.
Oh, we tried.
Hey everybody, Shane Presley here with the Rock Paper Podcast. Let me tell you about my friends over at Naked Vine. Located at 1624 Clarkson Road in Chesterfield, Missouri. Say come by and visit them Tuesday through Saturday. I'll have some great live music happening this week. Thursday, August 9th, from Eric Barnes. Friday, August 10th, John Bonham and Friends. And Saturday, August 11th, The Matching Shoe. And this is a do-not-miss show. If you have been following these guys at all, this will be Dominic's last performance with the band. So do not miss The Matching Shoe there on Saturday, August 11th. And then my singer-songwriter storytelling show will be back out at Naked Vine on Tuesday, August 14th with Anna Shanoff, Bobby Stevens, and Matt Wynn. So come on out to that show as well. All these details and more can be found at nakedvine.net. Be sure to follow along with them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And come on out for grab a cold drink, some great local craft beers, some whiskey, some wine, all kinds of delicious beverages. So come on out to the Naked Vine. We'll see you there. Thanks, everybody. Enjoy the show.
Podcast is kind of like a, it's like a radio show that's not on the radio. It's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
I'm Val.
And I'm Ethan.
Of Miss Jubilee and the St. Louis Steady Grinders.
And you're listening to the Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Thank you.
Hey everybody, Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, coming to you from St. Louis, Missouri. Hanging out today with Valerie and Ethan of Miss Jubilee and St. Louis Steady Grinders. Mm-hmm. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for coming out and having us.
Yeah, I'm very excited about this. You're getting to hang out and talk about the bands and everything else we got happening. Busy time for me. You guys are always busy, but... there's a lot of big shows coming up for the coming into the fall and stuff, so this would be a pretty ideal time to talk about everything. So, like I said, this is our first time really getting to chat. I've seen the Miss Jubilee a couple times. I haven't got to see St. Louis Steady Grinders yet, but hopefully I'll be able to catch that show soon.
Yeah, we don't play out too much around here, but. You do like to.
Yeah. I don't think I've seen Miss Jubilee show in a minute. I think actually the last time I got to catch the live one was at Broadway Oyster Bar during, I think it was Funk Fest or something.
Oh, okay,
that was going.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's been a little bit, I think, and Funk Fest should be coming up here hopefully again this year.
Mm-hmm.
So, so it's been a little while since I've seen you all play live, and that's so I'm excited to get to catch up and talk about everything going on. But I guess you want to fill me in on how Miss Jubilee and all this came to be. I mean, how
well, it was all before my time, so I have to pass it over to Valerie for the origins and all that.
It's I always try not to make up a story that's like this like ideal version because it's been so long.
Right.
So. Pretty much, it's been a little over 10 years ago, and at that time, I was actually still finishing school for photography, and in my spare time, I did a lot of traveling to see, you know, various bands that were doing, to me, any kind of old music, but in like a nice, authentic way. There was a lot of festivals that we would go to, and primarily I was going to these as a swing dancer, and it got to the point where I just was getting really fed up with, you know, you come back home and then you're like, well, we have great music, but it's not what I ideally would want as a band. And I'm also a dancer. And when I come back home, there's nothing to go dancing to except for DJ music,
right.
Which was kind of at that time, that's how it had been. It hadn't always been that way. We did have good bands, but at that point, it just was more irritating, if anything, that, you know, why don't we have this here? Especially since we have a great history of music here. So I was getting to know a lot more musicians by then, just from going out to a lot of shows, and then also people around me, just starting to realize that there was a lot of people around me, a lot of talent, and I just wanted to start something. And I already knew that I loved singing, and I was very specific about what I liked singing. So I, at the time, Dan, who's the drummer now, was not actually in the band. But I knew that he had a lot of history of kind of piecing people together. He had, in fact, just tried to get a band together of people. And the girl that was going to sing in it just at one point realized she didn't want to do it.
Right.
It's a different type of band. But I was observing this and seeing that go on. So I kind of approached him, you know, asked, well, how do you do this? I think that I could do a band. I think that that's what I want to do. And I had been singing my whole life, but never in my life thought that I could do a band. I didn't know how that worked. I'd never done something in a live situation. So with a lot of help from him, and mostly it was, you know, hey, you know this guitar player, well, that's who I would probably suggest. And kind of going towards people and approaching them. The funny thing was right off the bat, every single person that I approached was like, yeah, I would do that.
Yeah.
Of course, I would do that. So when we started off as a, at the time, what I would have said was a jump blues band. Mostly because that was the kind of music I knew that people were dancing to, and also I was familiar with, and also that those players were good at. So it started off with, you know, guitar, drums, upright bass, a couple horn players, and we just gave it a go, and it was, from the first practice, it was perfect. Mm. I mean, it already had that right sound, so we just went with it. And from then, the idea developed a lot. I added a piano player, and just kind of stuck with that idea. As the swing dancing became not so much the actual, you know, primary vision for the band, I would say that pretty much for myself, I realized that I didn't want to do a full jump blues band, that I was actually more interested in a deeper sense with old jazz and older blues. And at the same time, my lineup actually came down to about three players. So that was about 2 years in, it came down to three players. So we were barely existing even as a, I mean, it turned into basically like a blues band because it was electric bass, guitar and drums. And me.
Right.
And so it was at this phase where I was like, this is not at all what I want. This has nothing to do with what I want. Now, I love people who do that and are into that. That's fine. But that's not what I wanted to do. So it was just like an easy time for us to do a full switch. And the drummer became the piano player. That's when Dan entered into the band and became the drummer. And we started kind of setting the path for what we currently do.
Right.
So that was kind of the big change. But that's primarily how the band started. Was I was a dancer and I just hated what was going on around me to dance to.
Sure. Is that did that all start with like your parents or somebody, or how, where did that level of like that music come from? That
sure. Well, what I ended up kind of flipping to, I think that yes. So that actually was stuff that I was just really accustomed to hearing somehow or another.
Right.
My grandparents were of the generation where, you know, the 30s was kind of their heyday, and so a lot of that is that earlier jazz, the earlier, you know, large bands doing real hot music. And always having heard it made me interested in always digging for more. So way beyond ever having a band, I had already spent a lot of time searching for more old music that I liked, because you know, I never was really into like the 40s big band. Mm-hmm. I always liked that earlier sound. I didn't know how much of it there was. So a lot of early on was me digging into that and trying to find, oh, this is my music, which has always been my attitude about music. Even early on, it was being in different scenes of music. It was always, well, this is mine. I've picked this. So having heard it through family members gave me that realization that I liked that sound. But like by high school years, I was digging into a lot of female singers and bands that had a lot of horn players. So that's always been my, that thing where like, I feel like this is the music I know the best.
Right.
So it's a bit of both. I guess having heard it made me know that I like it, but also there was an interest to find more of it early on.
Yeah. That's a lot of how I am with this show, actually. Like, you know, I was always a music fan. My parents kind of introduced me to a lot of my favorite stuff. A lot of, it was a lot of Southern rock and things and that nature of what my dad grew up on in the 70s and stuff. And then so that was like the early stuff that I was a fan of. And I started going to a lot of like more modern rock shows, and had friends from high school started playing out in original bands, and I would go support them, and I started like talking about music, and I thought I had a fair idea what St. Louis music, but then I quickly, you know, doing the show, I quickly dove like headfirst into what we were doing here, and like I realized there was so much more than I had any idea about. Like, there's so many different pockets of St. Louis music scene, and like, you know, even like, you know, I wasn't aware of what you guys were doing at the time, but like, it's just fun to kind of tap into all these different things what we have going on in the city. So it's cool to hear from yourself, like as a fan and as an artist, that you wanted to learn and you know, keep digging and trying to find all that stuff too. So
yeah, I think also like when we started the band, like I said, there's always been a part of me that wants to not really have this like mental possession, but like kind of like I found this on my own. I think for me, when we started doing the jump blues, that's kind of why that really interests me, because I had no family member that ever you know, gave me any knowledge about 50s music. I had no idea. I didn't really know it at all. I had no idea. I remember the first time I heard a song that was like a rockabilly style song, and I had never, it was foreign to me, so it just was so interesting. Mm-hmm. That I think when I started the band, that's probably why it was kind of like, well, you know, if I do this, it's just my own idea, because I don't have any concept of how this should go. It's, you know, my own thing. But like I said, and, you know, on, you know, when you find out you're going to be doing something for a while, there, you want to have more purpose and more meaning. And so like that, okay, like that's a very young way, I guess, to view something. So when it really came down to what do I want to do, for me, when I was digging into a lot of the older music, there were so many times when I would find connections to St. Louis. Mm-hmm. And that was always a thing to me that was so cool, that, you know, like it gave the city itself this different life that I had never understood.
For sure.
So, you know, like as I developed and grew up and kind of, you know, had to really figure out, am I still doing a band? What do I want to do? That was, I think it was those moments that made me really go back to that music.
Yeah. I can recall, like, especially as like teenager and stuff, going through school and like not really thinking there was much happening here in St. Louis, and and boy was I wrong. Like,
yeah, it's like, right, I know.
It's like I just kind of, you just always think that this is a kind of, is, I had no idea at all, you know. It's like, but like I said, as I went into old digging and stuff, and then you learn some of the history of what is happening here in St. Louis, and then like learn what is currently going on in St. Mm-hmm. Louis. Like, there is so much, and that's a lot of like, I don't know if y'all see me online, but I post those lists of what's mm-hmm. happening in the town, because like so many people were like, oh, there's nothing to do in this town. I'm yep. like, no, you're wrong.
There's yeah.
like, so
you can find great,
you know, music. I think about this all the time, because, well, now I'm in my early 40s, and so when I was in high school, that time period, like where I was like, oh, you know, there's nowhere for me to find this stuff, there's nothing mm-hmm. going on, I had no idea that there actually were still connections then,
right,
that now I can't get. Mm-hmm. You know, like a lot of people have passed away, and I just wish, like, why didn't I speak more about it loudly,
yeah,
so that some adult out there was like, no, you can actually go do this, or yeah, go do that. Just make your parents take you, or you go do, you know, just go do it.
Sure.
I had no idea.
Well, I think that's what's also cool about today with the internet and, you know, social media,
yeah,
and things, that you can easily quickly find a group of people that are like-minded that want
yeah.
to do something similar, like, so whatever.
Well, and that's one way that it actually is even, where like no matter what age you are,
right,
if you go and start to look for something, you can actually find
sure.
it. We find a lot more young people come to our shows because
yeah.
they found us that way, which is really sweet.
Yeah.
There's not a lot that I wish, you know, when it comes to technology, that I had had, you know, when I was young, but being able to have that connection
right.
to knowing what's going on is really nice.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Social media is how I found my way to St. Louis.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Like, yeah, so, you know, you take it so many years ahead. So, you know, like I said, this was a little over 10 years ago. So Ethan kind of entered the picture about 4 years ago. Well, 4 years ago was when we really were starting to get different musicians into the scene, and other people were finding their way here on their own, and it just had developed so much that we were, you know, able to find people who were a little more interested in being able to play the kind of style I was going for, and so, and we're all getting a little more connected, fans and musicians, so then Ethan just comes out of the blue.
Well, yeah, I was living in New York City, playing piano, mostly doing solo, though I had a band too called Chicken Town. And I'm originally from Connecticut, so New York City was kind of the normal choice for me. That's where most of my people were at. And I'm a natural, just like Val, like we both really love the history of this whole thing, and it's part of like discovering that history that keeps our search going and wanting to understand the picture and really see it. And so for me, that's piano. It's like all the old Barrel House piano, all the 20s and 30s stuff. And I was, you know, was playing all that stuff. There's some boogie woogie stuff and different regional styles that I, you know, continue to work on. But for me, one of the main ones that I was discovering was meaning a lot to me was the St. Louis sound. And I was just getting really deep into this St. Louis sound, and a lot of it is piano and female vocals. It's like, it's this very sparse, beautiful thing that if you like it, and like as I was finding, it was a pretty lonely thing to like because you just don't find people who seem to care about it. Blues fans like the Delta stuff, or they like the Chicago stuff, and jazz fans like the big hot things, and it's just like, who likes this music? And especially in New York City, why would anyone care about the St. Louis thing? So I was like literally Googled, I love pre-war St. Louis blues. Like I was so lonely just to find like someone else who might care about this. Because meanwhile, like I'm talking to singers in that town. You know, I'm just booking a club there for the trad jazz and feeling like waiting to sort of get something back from them. But it's really not a blues town, so they really don't care. Like I could play this. You know, I was starting to feel like I was really starting to play blues on like a really high level. And it was just clear that no one there knew the difference or cared, you know, and how different that is in St. Louis, mm-hmm. where you have folks that have been listening to blues for 80 years, you know, 70 years, and can say, you know, and like on this little tangent, but like, you know, coming here and it's like, they'll be like, oh man, I heard Roosevelt Sykes in the 70s, you know, so they're drawing all this other memories alive. I heard Henry Townsend playing the piano, or James Crutchfield, or Johnny Johnson, all this stuff, and they have all this reference with which to appreciate, I guess, like what I'm doing and why it counts, you know, versus there it didn't matter. I could play the most low-down blues and someone would come up to me at the end of that song and say, cool ragtime, and it would just crush me, like, you know, because I feel like, man, how did this is the serious blues. But anyway, back to the story. So like when I googled I love pre-war St. Louis blues, and Kevin Belford's book popped up on the screen, The Devil at the Confluence. And you know, here's this thing that someone else obviously cares as much as I do, and it's St. Louis, and suddenly it's like it dawns on me, because I was getting pretty disaffected with New York in general, thinking that maybe this is where I need to be, and so suddenly it's like, wait a minute, St. Louis. So I mean, of course I should be reaching out to St. Louis, and like if I'm doing this thing, of course I should like think about like going down there on some level. So anyway, you know, I reached out to him, like, can I get your book, and you know, what's going on down there. And he put me in touch with Val and Dan. And so, you know, as soon as Val and I started talking, it was like, I sent this song. Well, do you know this song? You know, Peeping at the Rising Sun. Do you know this song? It's like my favorite song. That's just like, it's got this beautiful, sparse piano and this just perfect melody and singing. And it's just like, it just was meaning everything to me at the time. And to have her be like, yeah, I know that song. I love that song. I have the words already written down. She had a book full of all these tunes that I'm just like, begging to find someone else to love it like I do, you know, and to find a singer who loves it like I do for the same reasons, but on the opposite end of the spectrum of what it is, like, you know, loves the feels, and the whole thing was just like, it was incredible. So
thinking about my good man and everything that he has done. Sometimes he makes me moan, and sometimes he makes me cry. Sometimes he makes me moan, and sometimes he makes me cry. And the way he treats his mama, Lord, sometimes he makes me wish I could lay down and die.
As soon as I found that out, okay, well, I got to come down there because, you know, we got to make a record or something like that. And so I came down and visited, and this was June of 2014. I spent about 5 days here, and I went up in about a week in Chicago because, you know, I was thinking about leaving New York. So I was checking out these places. And I got here, you know, and there was a ragtime afterglow party from the Scott Joplin. So all these ragtime players in town, and I got to play with some of them, and they were excited. I went to Bottle Works and I played, and everyone was like, man, that's early, that's Barrel. They like kind of knew what I was doing, and me and Val, like, you know, got to get to know each other a little. I heard Rum Drum Ramblers at the Blue City Deli and you know, learn about Henry Townsend, and suddenly I'm like, here's a 30-year-old Matt Wilson who learned from Henry Townsend, who recorded with my heroes in the mid-30s. I'm like, this is, and the crowd is cheering for this. I'm like, where am I? What is it? This place exists? So, man, I was hooked. There was no way. 2 months later, I moved here. You know, I one-way ticket. I kind of, I mean, I had a lot of regular gigs and stuff in New York, and so I said, okay, well, what I'm doing is I'm just going to buy a one-way ticket. I'm going to, you know, get people to cover my gigs there for a little bit, and I think this can work. And then it turned out, you know, that it was going to be able to work. And you know, so she and I started, like, what we'd later call the St. Louis Steady Grinders, which was just a chance for us to play this music together. Miss Jubilee was a band I thought I would never be able to play with because I didn't play jazz at all.
Right. But the interesting thing is, like, from the other perspective of what was going on here with the Jubilee band, I had already been trying to introduce some actually like old St. Louis blues within the band and then other material from St. Louis in the band. And people loved it. They were really supportive of the idea of what we were doing. But like, I knew that we weren't really hitting the mark of giving it that proper feel or energy. So it was like hard to distinguish from other material. And that was a really big deal for me because, like, you know, he's saying, it's like you dig in and you really find out these differences. And, you know, like I was studying all these singers. I'm like, oh, they all do this one little thing. And they end like this.
Yeah.
And to not be able to portray that, even though you're trying, was really frustrating. So it was almost this perfect moment when you get a piano player who was so acquainted with the jazz or the blues style. Because when he did play jazz with us, and all of us would actually say this. Now, he didn't believe it because, you know, when you're the person, you're like, I'm doing this horrible job at this. You kidding me? I don't sound like any of you.
Right.
But the thing is because he did come in his own way and had more of a really strong, you know, just strong percussive aspect to his playing, it actually made the jazz right, too. So as he was learning it, it was like, we were like, no, keep working at this because this is going to be a really good fit. So it actually boosted where we were able to be with doing the St. Louis music. Like, you know, on the new album, we have some Petey Wheatstraw materials. Like, yeah. Well, okay, we have a player who already loves Petey Wheatstraw. Yeah. And
that's
also
Throw Me in the Alley. That's why we named the title. That's why we named it Throw Me in the Alley, because that's a old St. Louis tune that had, like, so many of the guys. But how did TJ describe it yesterday? Like, it's basically like a mural. It would be like
if someone
drew
like this picture of all these people playing together.
Yeah.
But like they never really played together.
Yeah.
They actually like that's song.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a
fiddle, trombone,
yeah.
Trumpet,
it's almost
singing,
this
piano.
Like overbearingly nutty song. But it's how can you not just love the energy on it? Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
So anyway, that's kind of the other side of when he was coming. And also, a lot of us would tell Ethan this, that the thing is what he was playing, a lot of people do want to hear without knowing they want to hear it. They just had never been given the opportunity to hear someone play that, you know, that style. But because there is a huge acceptance of a lot of styles of blues, and, you know, that is a huge part of our history of music. And then you have ragtime. It's got a great history here. And you have jazz has a great history here. When you hear a piano being able to cover a lot of those feels, regardless of what you want to call the song, people love it because they understand that feel. So I would say you get even more people than I do as a band who are like, oh, you remind me of this music my dad used to play, or, oh, I had this family member and he always talked about this and that.
Well, yeah, because you when people hear you, they associate with something a little more, I want to say, universal, and how they imagine old music to be with, like, you know, a front. But the thing is, because you're authentic to yourself, like, you sing this music so authentically to me that it's yourself. Like, you don't have to pretend, you're not putting on this airs, you know. And I think that's Val's biggest strength, and that so people relate to her as a person, and they're not just feel like they're seeing a museum piece, you know. And that's why she's able to have been so successful in this town doing this old music, you know, whereas sometimes you just think of it like, oh, like a fun little novelty piece. But yeah, like, I mean, for me, when I got here and I was just said, this is a piano town. That's what I've been hammering since I got here. That's been, like, my big message. And we've put acoustic pianos all over town, you know. I've helped inspire a few other, you know, young pianists to move here. And just, you know, I started a piano festival and just gotten this town so excited about knowing this is a piano town. For this is, you know, we travel in the traditional music circles of this town, you know, that's sort of our people, our community is, like, you know, whether it's the old time musicians or the acoustic blues or the traditional jazz, like, you know, that's been our circle. And so those people, to get them all excited about and expecting to hear acoustic pianos with all these groups, you know, makes a big difference. Because anywhere else besides, you know, maybe New Orleans, which actually doesn't have a lot of piano, but in traveling the scene, except for, I mean, there's plenty of piano down there. So other than New Orleans, we'll say, like, you know, you're more likely going to hear this stuff on a keyboard, you know, but not in this town, you know. So when we get other players in town, they're so excited. And
I think it's also really, like I said, it is a town that there are a lot of people who are very familiar with piano music, right? Just old piano, yeah, music. And I think it's been able to be that bridge to kind of bring back that respect by seeing it on pianos. And I think a lot of that is important, because it's just the same as doing, like, you can't do, you know, 1920s music that was done on guitar on an electric guitar. It already is a different thing. And, you know, we're pretty good at doing that with other instruments, but unfortunately, you know, a lot of people don't want to have to take care of a piano. So that's that thing that just gets taken right out. So I think that's been able to, that you've been really strong about that and created this community of many musicians and places that want piano. It's actually revived that respect for piano music.
Because you can wail on a keyboard all night long and someone will say, man, that guy is really good at playing. But it doesn't mean that they're gonna be actually affected by it. So it's why, you know, all the blues bands, you know, keyboard is probably the less cared about instrument of all the blues. You know, it's like the harmonica, guitar, drums even, because it's just like, yes, oh man, that guy's really good, but it doesn't actually touch your soul like it needs to.
Right.
So
I'm just thinking about what you're saying about caring for a piano and all this stuff. Like, I saw Greg Allman one night, and he always got his Hammond B3, and he played a show, and there was something happened where something was going on. I don't know exactly what the problem was, but it was something wrong with the Hammond, and so he gets up and takes a guitar and starts playing a song on guitar at that time, while he had two guys come in and swap his and bring out another Hammond B3. And I was like, I'm just like, who has a spare Hammond B3 right back here? Like, you know, but that's it. So travel with a spare everywhere.
Well, right now in our garage, I have three pianos, three little five octave acoustic pianos I bring around. And just at Blue City Deli last week, because I always bring, if I don't have a piano already in the place, I'll bring my little 5-octave piano, we call it the little guy. And I had this little screw that came loose at Blue City Deli, and suddenly like 4 people were around like the floor trying to find this little nut and bolt for me. It was really funny. Like if I had to run home to get a new one, I guess I would do it too.
Right.
But yeah, I mean that commitment, you know, to that sound, you know, just like having that Leslie and that Hammond, you know, that, you know, you in some ways you make your life harder, but boy do you make more of an impact.
Oh yeah. Yeah,
there's I have a funny story about the first person I ever had that actually brought a piano to a show was not Ethan. It was Matt Sellers, who had been playing piano right before us. Now Matt, like, he would use keyboard because he was this guy who isn't as good at getting everyone to do what he wants done. Like, Ethan just figures it out. He's really good at that. But so we were like, we're doing the deli. We've been able to have piano, you know, at some of our weeklies we were doing at that point. So we were like, he was like, you know, I can bring the piano. And I was like, you know what? We should do that there because they will care. And I always will remember this because now it's totally the opposite. We came in there with, he had a full-size piano, but we came in there with a piano. And I remember more than one person going, really? In the smallest place, right. You're bringing a piano in the smallest venue. And we're like, yeah, you know, and everyone loved it that night. But now, if Ethan were to come in there with a keyboard, people would be like, what? You didn't bring the piano?
Yeah.
They would be the opposite now. Right. Everyone's gotten so used to it. It's wonderful.
Yeah. So I guess getting back to our band, right? I mean, getting back to Miss Jubilee. I mean, Matt decided to leave the band. He has a company, the St. Louis Vintage Piano Company, restoring old uprights, and he wanted to give a little more time to that. So that really created the opportunity for me to come join the band and sort of learn to play, you know, traditional jazz, which I really had no, learn to read charts, get sort of the strided stuff on, which has been, man, so fun to learn. But in that time, that's when we started to sort of, that's when this, I think the sound is taking like about a second. You know, we want to say like third little twist and turn for what this band has been, where...
Yeah, I would say that this is, and I actually say this pretty much all the time. The band started mostly because I just really wanted to have a band, do something for dancers, and also be able to give part of myself that way. Then it was this realization, you know what, maybe this is not exactly what I want to do, so maybe I should actually take it seriously now that I've been doing it a while. Let's focus on this. Both of those moves were like based around the people I had. When it really came down to like, what would I really want to be doing? I always say the turn that we've taken now is actually, if I had been told you can start a band, you can have whatever you want.
Right.
How the band is now is probably ideally what I've always wanted. But like Ethan moving here, and I would have to add now Ken even to that, our trumpet player, I needed to have those players. So part of that whole thing of at least having something going on has made me find those people. But I would say that, yeah, so this twist has been probably the most meaningful, but you need the proper players for sure. It.
So like we're a strong 5-piece right now. That's pretty much how we mostly play as, which is vocals, piano, pretty much always an acoustic piano, upright bass, Richard Trallis, you know, who's been playing in this town forever. And so solid and so great. Dan's playing drums and washboard. Now he's had a lot of washboard to his repertoire because that's a big part of the sound that we're doing now. And Ken Sebrian is playing trumpet. Ken moved from Chicago about 3 years ago and because he had a job. He's an engineer and he's been just a great addition. And, we used to have David Gomez playing horns, but he's traveling so much, playing with some really cool rock and roll bands, that he sort of had to move on. He would play a lot. So that's where we're at with this sort of 5. Same with Tyler Stokes. He's busy with Devin.
Yeah.
Which is awesome to see. And so like that's where we sort of like become this really tight 5-piece where we can focus on this kind of hot blues is the only really way to describe it, this jumped up blues sound that was happening a lot in Chicago in the 30s that I tell you, like, no band plays like, you know. So, you know, as history nerds, you know, as much as anything else, and proud of, like, you know, Val and I are very similar in this way, is that we don't play old bands to do the familiar stuff, you know. And that, it's like, obviously, that's a choice, you can do that, but, you know, we like that search. We like to bring out these new tunes with these new old tunes, you know, and sort of like, so now with the band that we have, we can do this, we can hit this sort of sound that no other jazz band is, you know, no other jazz band is bluesy enough. No blues band is jazzy enough. So we're in this really cool spot and we're real proud of the sound. And we know most people aren't familiar with it, but it's so, we hope so, like, infectious right away, you know. And we can do this material because of Val, you know, because the material is, it's all vocal blues, you know, and it's like a lot of silly stuff. Hokum blues, that's what we call it, you know, and like things like that. This is really cool.
Yeah.
It makes me excited. A lot of it is. You know, like, there's that tightness there, but a lot of what I had never really respected as someone who loves, you know, big bands and all the layers that you can have. And talking about Hokum players, that is kind of the best way to describe it, because a lot of those folks from back in the day actually did play in larger ensembles or played in other ensembles. And when you say, like, oh, then they were doing Hokum blues, what that really means, like, it was to a very high degree music, but it was also at the same time this music where there was a lot more engagement between the players that you can just hear. And I feel like that's something that we've been able to do having a five piece, because you can actually hear how things are responding to each other instead of it being these thicker layers. It's more precise and clear, you know?
So we have a Miss Jubilee record that came out last year, 2017, is that right?
Yeah. End of last year. Yeah.
And we also have St. Louis Steady Grinders record now. Also.
We recorded that over the same 3 days.
Oh, wow.
They were all sort of back to back.
So we did the, there's actually the dates on the back. Yeah. I think this one was first. Yeah, so we did the Jubilee one on the 21st and 2nd of February. And then Steady Grinders was the 23rd.
Wow.
So the 2 days as a full band were like, all live tracks. We were all in the same room together. Some mics.
We had a bigger band. We still had David Tyler's playing, so it was 8-piece.
So, but there was actually only 3 mics. So it was still a lot of, you know, like, it's all bleeding into everything. So what you have is what you're going to get. And mostly wanted it to be that way.
Yeah, I immediately, when I was listening on the way down, even I had a streaming on Spotify, and so even through that, through digitally, you can still hear a lot of that, and like
that looseness.
Yeah, and it was very unique recording compared to, you know, a lot of modern recording. So it was just it was fun to hear. Even when, like, you're singing, like, you could hear, like, as you backed off the mic and, like, and you could still hear it, like, coming through other stuff too. Mm-hmm. Some, you know, different things like that. So
yeah, one of my favorite parts on the album is on Whipping That Jelly at the very end of the song when everyone's singing. Yeah. I mean, it actually sounds like it's just at a restaurant or something. Like, it's got this, like, really loose, you know, how people are talking and shouting. But anyway, but it was still very intense.
Sure.
So there's a lot of takes because, okay, that one's kind of there. That one's not quite there. Okay, that's kind of, and you know, the take is do the whole song again.
Right.
So it was pretty exhausting. It was, oddly, it had been raining, so it was also really hard to breathe. It was really hot and thick out for the winter time, which was, of course, you know, you're like, of course that would happen. And then, so we went in that third day and we just had, one mic, ribbon mic 77 on us both. And there was a lot of just putting it in a spot. So we spent about an hour just figuring out where to actually set this mic.
Yeah.
As we just ran stuff. And so we just kind of just went through all the tunes and it just felt like we were playing in a room at home.
Yeah.
You know, it was just so nice and relaxed. So the recording experience was really nice.
And I brought in a piano. They had one, but I didn't like it enough. So I had one of Matt Sellers' pianos, which I've since bought, a beautiful Mason Hamlin upright that we used all weekend.
Yeah.
Now I have it at Yaki's, so I can play that one.
Oh, very nice.
I'm out.
All those songs are all previous release material, right? Like, is there any originals that you guys are working on or anything like that that you would put up?
Not on the record, no. It's like it says that.
Yeah, it's all pretty much like Ethan was saying.
Yeah.
It's all music that we've, like, if you go back in time,
sure.
You know, and you take all these old tunes, it's like the ones that are on the very edge. They're just getting overlooked all the time. Right. So a lot of it was specifically to bring that music back to life.
Yeah.
And that's the key.
I would say my attitude is that that's pretty much what I am as a singer. I like to bring these songs back to life. Sure. I think that they deserve that. Not to say, like, I make up songs in my head all the time, but I've never thought of myself as an arranger or a, music writer. I think, Ethan, you kind of are more game for letting it happen when it happens.
Yeah, but, like, I think I can speak for you in this, it was, like, because it's just what we are as traditional musicians, you know, that we embrace that historic thing, and
right.
We find that, like, and going out to hear musicians, it's like you end up expressing yourself by the breadth of your repertoire, and when you put it all together, you know, then you start to see what someone's real voice is, but you do it through that thing. So it's like a fiddle player is playing all these fiddle tunes from all around the country. Well, why do you pick that song? Well, why do you pick that song? Well, why is it played that way? You know, that sort of that voice comes out, and the same thing with a traditional jazz horn player. And so that's the sort of aspect that we've embraced.
I would definitely say that that's pretty much exactly as I am as a musician. I will do a song if someone needs me to do a song, but I don't feel like that's me being me. Like, right. When I really feel like I'm doing music, it's usually these old songs that I'm just like, man, that is just a spot-on song. That is so good. That, for me, there is a purpose just because of how I relate to that song. The way I can give that song is, I think, where I shine the most.
Yeah, and finding that way to do the song justice, to capture that feel and all those things, and yet not be a sound alike. You know,
right.
there's a cool little spot there where you do feel like you are expressing yourself to the fullest, you know, and you're not copying at all, but you're fully playing that thing. It's like a fun
one of my favorite singers from back in the day. Now, I love some other singers, and everything they did was their own tune. Like, for example, Victoria Spivey, great material, and hers is mostly just hers. But another person I love a lot is Merlene Johnson, and the funny thing about Merlene Johnson is she covered Petey Reed's Straw Tune, she covered Washboard Sam, she does have some of her own tunes that are actually really well known now that are her own tunes, but she just did anything.
Right.
Like, whatever she did, it sounds like she should be doing it, and I think that there always has been that type of musician, that is their way to be a musician.
Sure.
Oh, I'm going to do that song, but I'm going to do it my way, and I'm going to do it better.
Yeah.
You know, and when I hear older musicians, a lot of stuff is covered by each other. And
oh, yeah.
So when I hear that, I think, yeah, what is the difference? The difference is that you're doing it, and that by you doing it, you're defining yourself as a musician.
Yeah. And we're not in this business to, I know this, like, personally, I have a lot of goals in terms of recognition and that kind of thing, but there's no sense of, like, oh, we're going to cross over, or we're going to, you know, anything like that. So in the mainstream, it is about, you know, songwriting and all those things and that high record, but that's not, I don't think either.
I mean, I would say, on the other hand, if, like I said, like, when I'm doing housework or something, like, I always make up little ditties in my head and stuff. If I actually thought that one was something that I should do in public,
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be like, oh, but I can't because I only cover this obscure stuff.
Yeah.
So to me, it's just kind of this very loose, like, well, that's what I want to cover because
mm-hmm.
that's what I feel like right
and
now.
I have a couple originals in Bottle Snakes. That's my main project for doing originals. Nick and I, we liked it. We do that thing, which is really fun and a chance to sort of free myself from, all of the stylistic
stresses that by covering the stuff.
Yeah, sometimes it's hard for me to even play a tune that was written in the 40s because I get so caught up in wanting to sound like it's 1935. You know, that so those self-imposed pressures. So, Bottle Snakes is good for that one. But yeah, it's cool. It's cool for us, you know, because we do have our two projects where, you know, so, you know, Miss Jubilee plays, you know, so much in town, and Steady Grinders don't, but the Steady Grinders, because partly because I'm a little more connected into the sort of global boogie-woogie scene, especially particularly in Europe. Like, Val and I get to go out there a bunch. So we were just in England and played at the UK Boogie Fest doing the Steady Grinder stuff. And we'll be back and we'll be in Vienna in the winter. We were in France last year. And, like, so, like, that... Because they know that boogie-woogie stuff, and they know our repertoire a little better than others. They know the piano players I'm referencing, and they know
familiar
they don't hear
with the
very
piano
often.
Players.
And because there's so much infrastructure, like in this country, there's no infrastructure for the kind of blues we're doing, you know, and the jazz festivals, it's too bluesy, you know, blues festivals, thing. But out there, there's so much infrastructure for that kind of boogie-woogie, for that kind of thing. So we've been having, you know, our names are ringing out there a little bit more, which has been cool, but...
Say, like, what they are a little bit more interested in having displayed is even if it's not exactly what they're precisely into, they really respect the stuff that's right prior to it to kind of give it this... Yeah, give it this actual true perspective. You know, they have a little bit of... It's like you said, there's more just of an infrastructure for it. It's not that they have more respect. I think when people hear it here, they have that same feeling.
Yeah.
But funded and all that kind of stuff it's more there already.
They know
it's built in.
Right.
Yeah, just to be able to have those musicians able to play that stuff.
And that's got to feel good, though, too, just to be that your music's taking you all over the world. Like, that's pretty incredible.
Yeah, Val said it once too, that it's like, it's just like shocks her so much that, like, it's playing like her hometown. Like, for me, it's not my hometown music, though. I'll rep St. Louis till the day I die. But, like, for Val, it's like, this is like her hometown music. And for them, people just to, like, want to hear us play St. Louis blues. You know,
I laugh
really
because
cool.
I spent so many nights, like, when I was finding this music, early on, I'd say I was finding it in my high school years, but continuing to find it in my early 20s. So that was also, you know, when I would spend a night at home and drink some whiskey or something. And I just laughed that I'm like, I used to spend a night alone just digging through a singer and listening to it. And these people in these other countries want to hear that. You know, this was my drinking music.
Yeah, no, it's really cool, though.
Yeah.
It's very cool.
But like you said, you do have you do play a lot here in town, and we have some pretty big shows. We'd like you to come out and see the band. We have August 9th over at Joe's Cafe, that's more like a true listening room experience,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it
sure
quirky,
is.
Man, a quirky and awesome room. I've wanted to play there since I moved there, and I'm very excited for the opportunity.
It's got a really special feel. It sounds great in there, and people really respect it as a listening room. You can bring your own food and drinks. So it's just got this very homey atmosphere, but also really... you just sense the respect in the room for the music that's being played.
Yeah, very cool. And... August 31st, Focal Point in Maplewood, another listening room.
Mm-hmm.
Type experience.
All month they're doing a jazz series there on Fridays and Saturdays. So, all month they're bringing in bands from New Orleans, Chicago, the Chicago Cellar Boys. So, we are like right towards the end of that Shake 'em Up jazz. But all these great jazz bands will be coming in through town, traditional jazz, the Arcadia Dance Orchestra, which is TJ's 11-piece orchestra. So it's going to be we're really happy to be a part of that.
Yeah.
And then go right to the Blues Festival in town.
Yeah.
Right. I love this town.
Labor Day weekend, Big Muddy Blues Festival.
Yeah.
And you guys play on the September 2nd.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Third time at the festival or second? Oh my God, how many?
Well,
the first time I like ever really played with you at a show, I sat and we did two songs.
Yeah, we've done it quite a few times throughout the years. I don't know how many total years that is.
I think the last three have been all St. Louis, right?
Yeah, but Jupiter hasn't been out.
We were we weren't available for last year, and you could, there's shows that you almost cry over not being at.
Right.
So that was one of those. So we're really excited to be back at it.
Bottle Snakes did it the last 2 years. And there's a piano room this year, so I'm going to get to play. I'm going to do a solo piano set to it, piano room, which I'm excited about.
And I love that, that they had bigger turnout crowds for the all local night. That's like this.
Yeah,
it really shows where we're at. I mean, you know, you could say, okay, we spend all this time talking about how pianos are, you know, being put around town and that's growing. But, like, I think in general, just I would say the same thing about like the idea of what old jazz is has definitely developed throughout all those years of, you know, us trying to do old music, other bands growing because you're finding more players who are interested in it, you know, and that sense of, oh, you can do this music, that growing.
Right.
I always talk a lot about our friends who are dancers who started this a festival that's for dancing called Nevermore Jazz Ball, and we've played that, and it still is, like, we're doing it this, you know, November, but that did a lot for this town too. Actually having other people outside of St. Louis kind of see this town as that thing. Other people have moved here for that, yeah. You know, just seeing it that weekend.
Yeah.
So I would say that a lot of musics are growing right now, and they're also finding their own way to be accepted. You know, not just like, oh, well, we're doing hot jazz. Like, well, that doesn't really mean anything anymore. You know, Boardwalk Empire days are over. You know, things are having to be defined on their own terms. Well, what are you actually doing? And right. I'd say St. Louis's strong point is that we don't like something just because it's the cool thing. It's like, if you do it well and you like it, you could actually keep surviving by doing it. So I just see right now that there is a lot of local music that's strong.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I guess I got to plug one other thing. I know we've been talking on and on. That's what we do. And that's what I do. But on August 18th at the Scott Joplin House, which is up on Del Mar, there's a building next door called the New Rosebud Cafe that the Friends of Scott Joplin uses. And it's called the New Rosebud because the old Rosebud was in the early 1900s. Tom Turpin, the first African-American to publish a rag, had a club. That was a real hotbed for ragtime. But anyway, so we're doing the first Rosebud Cafe Music Festival there as a celebration of our traditional music, you know, scene like we've been talking about. So Miss Jubilee, the Steady Grinders, the Gaslight Squares, Annie and the Fur Trappers, the St. Louis Ticklers, all these great, you know, young bands. Matt Wilson will be playing, Nick Pence. So a lot of us, not all, but a lot of the sort of young traditional musicians, we're all going to get together. Yeah.
And traditional just is like, you know, whatever it is. So there's a huge amount of old music's under that umbrella, right. Which is what I really like about how they're doing that. It's not just a jazz show. It's not just blues. It's not just ragtime or folk. It's actually all these different people who are just doing a very, you know, traditional style of what they're doing.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, you can find all those dates at miss-jubilee.com, and we got the Facebook page.
Yep.
EthanLineOne.com or the Facebook.
Yeah. I'll have it all up. Cool. I'll tag it all on my page too. So we'll keep you all up to date. Like I said, a lot of things happening. And check out the records all on your digital platforms, wherever you're getting music, or buy physicals at the shows, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Very cool. Well, this has been a ton of fun. Like I said, what's great about this too is like it just makes me want to go and do more homework, you know, to continue to, you know, Ethan listed off some bands that I still don't know, so I'd like to go, you know, get to know them and again continue to dive farther into, you know, traditional music and stuff too. So so thank you all for educating me a little bit on all this stuff too. So I appreciate you taking the time out to hang, and I'll see you all very soon.
Excellent, man. Yeah, thanks for having us on.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Well, yeah, that was it.